If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Okay, we ready? Okay in the booth? Thumbs up? Levels are set? Talent is ready? Write this in the book. Episode 122. 122. Okay, let's get going. Oh, wait a minute. The three S's, Jim, always do your three S's before every show. Star, smile, strong. Now we can start. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. A new episode is posted every Monday at WGNplus.com. And don't forget my landing page. Go to the WGNplus.com entertainment section. You'll see Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Click on there and you will see all 121 previous episodes, because this is episode 122. So welcome and thank you for scrolling or clicking or swiping or whatever it is you do to find your way here on a regular basis. I don't know how many of you actually listen to the podcast when it is posted on Monday. But hopefully, I certainly try to make these as timely and at the same time timeless, if you will. But sometimes it's kind of fun to go back and listen to a show that is about a very specific time as something was happening, and you wait, oh, remember when that was? And, well, that was back in March or whenever that was. So there is a there's a value to not only listening to the podcast when it is quote unquote fresh, when it is just posted, or going back in time, and it actually helps to jog the memory, and you can maybe have some fun, you know, taking a look at that. Yes, as you can probably hear, my voice is still a little nasal. Not as bad as last time. Wow. I really felt I was very clogged, but I didn't want to to miss a podcast. But yeah, I'm still this is a nagging kind of end of summer cold that will not go away. Thankfully, I'm not coughing a lot, but I still am a little congested, as you I'm sure you can hear. But I feel much better. And yeah, I've been doing a little to rest and beat this cold. But on the other hand, someone might say, no, you're really not. And I guess there's probably more truth to that, in that in the last week or so, not only have I continued to do the rehearsal process for a play that I'm going to be in a few weeks, so that's going on a regular basis, 2 to 3 or 4 times a week, for 2 or 3 hours, so, and obviously using my voice. But what I want to talk about today also involves probably a little pushing yourself a little more than you should if you're not completely feeling good. But once again, this is what we do. I've been very excited because after almost 8.5, 9 months of anticipation, finally, after the announcement in January, to great pomp and circumstance, Elton John's Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour has finally begun. If you remember, back in January, he made a big announcement with Anderson Cooper that he was going to do one last big tour around the world to have all of his fans get a final chance to see him perform. And then he would still perform and still make music and still, you know, do Broadway shows or make albums and still perform live, but just not performing live on a giant tour, which entails being on the road for 2 or 3 months at a time, and all the trucks driving from town to town, and the planes, and you know, the cars, and the living in hotels or whatever it may be, and the rigors of that. He probably will continue to perform a residency, which now is becoming much more of a popular idea with older acts. And he's done one in Las Vegas for almost the last 15 years, two different kind of shows, the Red Piano and the Million Dollar Piano. But those were performances where he would be at one venue for a week and a half or 2 weeks at a time, which certainly gave a little normalcy to his life and his crew's life and his band's life in that. It was a show, you know, maybe four times a week, but they were staying in the town, especially in Vegas, many times staying in the actual hotel where the theater was. So the travel involved was an elevator. And so it did at least give a little normalcy to an abnormal lifestyle of traveling on the road. And as he has cited, for his main reason, is he's got two young children. He is 71, and he came to parenthood at a late age, to say the least. But his sons, Zachary, is 7, and Elijah is 5, and he is 71 years old. He's still in fairly good health, but I think he's feeling a lot of the aches and pains of a 71-year-old, if not feeling more of those pains. He's got a pacemaker. He has had some health issues over the last couple of years. Nothing overtly serious, but as you get older, you know, the body starts to break down. I don't care how strong you are. I don't care how of a tough constitution that you have, and no matter how ambitious you may be, this machine we have called our bodies will break down. Even if we take the most care with them, they still will break down. And so he wants to spend as much time as he can watching his children grow. And so obviously the idea of a residency after such a long tour would provide that. He would either he'll probably do a residency somewhere in New York for a time maybe, or in London at a, you know, someplace like the Royal Albert Hall, or in New York at the Beacon Theater, or as I said before, in Vegas again, you know, at he did Caesar's Palace the last time. But, you know, he's got a home in L.A., so Vegas was close. He's got a home in London, so he could go there. In New York, obviously, you know, he'd probably stay at the nicest hotels. And so, but he wants to spend some time with his children as they grow up. So I don't know how you can argue with that. As fans, certainly we get a little possessive. But he certainly has given those of us who have been Elton John fans for many, many decades, he has certainly given more than enough of his talent and of his time. And so if you really admire him and have some kind of empathy, you certainly cannot argue with his reasons. So yeah, my nickname is Elton Jim. So this is obviously a big deal. But we are at the beginning of a 3-year tour, of which he will continue to tour the United States and Europe and all other places, Australia and the Far East, South America. He's touching them all. He's giving everybody a chance. Obviously, he'll be coming to the United States several times over the next 3 years, because this is his biggest market and where he is really beloved, even though he has a fan base, as I said, around the world. He knows where, you know, I mean, ironically, even though he is a British citizen and is very proud of being British, and he is a knight, he is Sir Elton, knighted by Queen Elizabeth several years ago. But America is really where his career took off and he became established and became almost the thing you hear about in a cliche. He was an overnight sensation. He had released an album in 1969, and it didn't really even make its way over here, called Empty Sky, and it didn't really do anything in England. He'd been playing around throughout England, and he had some minor success, but nothing big. And there was a decision made by his record company at the time to bring him to the United States. He hadn't played here. He hadn't been here physically. His music may have been played on some radio stations, but nobody really knew him. And don't forget, in April of 1970, the Beatles had broken up officially. Paul McCartney put out a solo album and announced that he was leaving the Beatles. And so there was this great void for a time and the great mystery as to, you know, well, aside from the Beatles, will they ever get back together? The question was, who is going to fill the void of being the next big thing? And that was a big question, because there certainly were a lot of acts out there already, somewhat established or on the rise, but the Beatles were a phenomenon. And don't forget, for most part, the Beatles came out of nowhere as well. And so there was a sense of, who is the next Beatles? Who is going to be, who or what band is going to be the next artistic rock and roll outfit here to take the world by storm? And there really wasn't a clear heir apparent. As I said, there were people like David Bowie, and don't forget, Simon and Garfunkel broke up in 1970 as well. So a lot of the biggest stars in the world in terms of rock music and popular music were breaking up as they were, you know, I mean, individually they went on, but as a group. And so there was this kind of void, and the music press and, you know, magazines like Rolling Stone and Cream and other, and Crawdaddy and these kind of music, rock music magazines of the time, they were trying to figure out and trying to anoint themselves who's, you know, the next thing. They would be looking around and listening to music and hyping people, but no one was really clicking. And so while this void in the rock world, in the pop music world, existed with the Beatles breaking up, a decision was made by Elton's record company. He had just put out his second album called Elton John. And there was this song on it called Your Song. And it was getting a little pickup on the radio and a little popularity, but nothing huge. Certainly not in England. It was released in England first, and it didn't take England by storm. So his record company took a big chance, and they brought him out to California and have him play a 3 or 4 night stand at one of the more popular nightclubs or rock clubs at the time. Don't forget, rock and roll was still in its infancy. Most rock bands were not playing in big hockey arenas or basketball arenas in the late 60s, early 70s. They were still playing in theaters. 3 or 4,000 seaters, maybe 2 or 3,000 seaters, but not 25,000 seaters, not 100,000 or 80,000 seat stadiums. Rock and roll was still in its infancy in terms of concerts. That's why things like Woodstock and the Monterey Festival and Altamont were such big deals, because it was just this massive bringing together of people, which really was not the norm at the time. Now we see this all the time. People like Ed Sheeran these days sell out Wembley Arena, Wembley Stadium, 80, 90, 100,000 people for two shows. That's amazing. So the rock world was kind of looking for someone to fill the Beatle void. And so they sent Elton, and off the power of this debut, or the second album, called Elton John, to the Troubadour Club in West Hollywood in Los Angeles. And it was a very influential club. A lot of the big stars of the day hung out there. A lot of stars of the future hung out there. It was a place to play. It was a very well-known rock club in L.A., where a lot of the whole music scene in L.A. congregated around here. So a lot of the producers and the managers would go to clubs and watch people play. This is where Carole King and James Taylor used to play early in their career. And it was one of the key spots. The Eagles got together through playing at the Troubadour in different bands. Glenn Frey was from Detroit. Don Henley was from Texas. they began in different bands. They all played at the Troubadour. They would hang out. They would drink. It was a bar as well. And one guy would start playing with another guy and this guy. And in fact, the Eagles started as the backup band for Linda Ronstadt. They met at the Troubadour and in the music scene. And Linda Ronstadt needed a backing band since she was a singer and not a musician. And so Glenn Frey and Don Henley actually started as members of Linda Ronstadt's backing band. And then they went on, obviously, to form the Eagles. And I went to Los Angeles this summer and paid a pilgrimage to the Troubadour. I didn't see a concert there. I didn't see a show there, but I did go there during the day. And if you talk about that era in the late 60s and early to mid 70s about the Troubadour, they'll always talk about Dan Tana's Steakhouse and how they would hang out there. In fact, I heard a story that the song Lion Eyes by the Eagles was written when Don Henley and Glenn Frey were observing this young woman going out with this older guy at Dan Tana's, and they sort of created this whole story about, Lion Eyes. But and it's right there still. Dan Tana's is 500 feet from the door of the Troubadour, so it's pretty cool to go there. But so Elton arrived in 1970 in August, and August 25th, 1970 was his first American show at the Troubadour. It probably holds about 200, 300 people. There was some hype within the music world, but not so much with the general public, because this really was a music insider kind of a gig to introduce Elton to the record companies and the record world, producers, movers and shakers, promoters, other musicians. So it was kind of an insider. The first show was mostly, music critics, the press, and people affiliated with the music business. It wasn't really the public. They didn't know who Elton John was. His music wasn't really being played here all that much. So the opening night, Elton John was on MCA Records here in the United States. And once again, to show how important this was to the record company, they even had at that time their undisputed biggest star on MCA Records in 1970 was Neil Diamond. And to do a favor for his record company, Neil Diamond introduced Elton at the Troubadour on August 25th, 1970. And he put on a show that blew away everyone. They were shocked to see the talent and the musicality and the live performance. He was putting it all out there. He was doing handstands. He was laying on the floor and playing the piano. He was bringing back those visuals and those memories of people like Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, who were wild playing the piano. It's a difficult instrument to play because it doesn't move. And so the player themselves, if they want to create some excitement, have to be the acrobat. And people hadn't seen a piano player not only with the proficiency, if not more proficiency. Elton John, one of the greatest piano players there is. But to be able to do this, bring this excitement and as much to the music while he's performing it, like Jerry Lee Lewis, who would stand and would jump on top of it, and Little Richard would stick his leg up on top. Whatever they can do to create some excitement with this 8-foot piano sitting there. And Elton was influenced by people like that, Fats Domino and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis. And so, but they were from the 50s, and they weren't popular anymore. And so Elton, though, was influenced by them. And so when he started playing some rock and roll songs, he was channeling those kind of performances, which hadn't been seen in a long time. And so it was kind of fresh and new again and exciting. And what really took people by surprise when Elton played the Troubadour in 1970 in L.A. was his album that he came to America to promote. The album itself was heavily orchestrated. A lot of orchestrations by the great and sadly late Paul Buckmaster, who died earlier this year. But if you listen to songs like Take Me to the Pilot or Your Song or Border Song, and other songs on that album, like The King Must Die. These are, you know, and other things like I Need You to Turn To. They're all heavily orchestrated, which gave the album itself a beautiful sound and a vibrant sound, produced by, sadly again, the late Gus Dudgeon. So it was it wasn't a big, loud rock and roll album. It was a heavily orchestrated, kind of lush sounding album. There was rock and roll music on it, and Elton's piano is featured prominently on it. But with the addition of the strings on almost every song, it did give it a different sound, which gave it something of an ear turner for people to go, whoa, well, what's this? This doesn't sound like anything else on the radio. But it certainly wasn't an all-out rock and roll album that you would have expected. So when Elton came to the Troubadour in this small club, he just had two other musicians with him, a drummer, Nigel Olsen, who was still playing with him, even though he hasn't played continuously with him over the last almost 50 years. He's been with him on and off. But Nigel Olsen on drums and the bassist, Dee Murray. So there wasn't even a guitar player in their band. And they recreated these songs that were heavily orchestrated on record, but in the course of the live show with just three people, a three-piece, no guitar band, they brought those songs to life. And they certainly gave them a more rougher rock and roll edge because they were live. They didn't have any strings. And so Elton's performance vocally, as well as I said, physically, as well as the proficiency and total domination of the piano. He has complete control of his piano. There's no question about that. You know, that blew people away. And the next day, in the Los Angeles Times, there was a rock and roll writer called Robert Hilburn, and he wrote a glowing review and said basically that rock and roll's next superstar just played at the Troubadour last night. And there is hope for rock and roll, and Elton John is it. And he basically ordained Elton as the next Beatles. As I said before, there was this void in this question, who's going to take the Beatles' place? No one at all expected it would be Elton John. He was not really on the radar screen. He was not in the list of potential candidates, as we do with presidents. Not at all. But on the strength of this one review and on the strength of these performances, which then the lines were around the block to see him the next three or four days he was there, because he had literally become an overnight sensation thanks to this review and thanks to this performance he put on August 25th. Music insiders were blown away, and they were talking about him. Suddenly, his music was being played on the radio, and Your Song, which was the key single, was being heard. Now, once again, that's not a rock and roll song, but all of a sudden, the name Elton John was very prominent, especially in L.A., and it began to cascade across the country. And it was on the strength of that one performance, that first night. So you hear about these overnight sensations. And certainly Elton John paid his dues. He'd been playing in England and playing in pubs since he was 15 or 16 and in different bands. So he certainly had paid his dues by the time that he was 23 years old. But still, he was only 23 years old. And from that moment, his life changed. His life changed completely. His career changed completely. Here he was, he's a great fan of music. And while he was in L.A., he was the toast of L.A. for, you know, a couple of weeks. All of his idols were coming to see him. People like, at the time, Leon Russell. And Quincy Jones was one of the main producers. Obviously, he went on to produce, Michael Jackson's Thriller. All the musical heavyweights now started swarming to the Troubadour to see what's the big deal about this Elton John guy. And he proved it to everyone. He even got a chance to meet one of his great idols, Brian Wilson, of the Beach Boys while he was there. So, I mean, this is somebody that was in total obscurity before he landed here. And even when he landed about a week before, you know, no one cared. But after August 25th, I mean, what's so ironic is he can really point to when his life changed forever. And it was that date. On August 26th, 1970, his life completely changed and never went back. He has pretty much always been on a forward trajectory, and it's an amazing career. And so that's what this Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour is now celebrating. As I said, he announced back in January that after almost 50 years of touring, he will be not touring anymore, still performing, as I said, live, but in certain situations, but not these big tours that go from town to town, city to city over 3 or 4 months at a time. But needless to say, for those of us who have followed Elton's career, I became an Elton fan in about 1973. I was 12 years old. No, I'm sorry, I was 9 years old. I was 9 years old. And the first record I bought of Elton John's was Crocodile Rock. That's the first one I bought. I remember hearing songs on the radio. At that time, I was mainly listening to AM radio, as most kids of my time and of my age group were. Here in Chicago, at WLS AM and WCFL, those were the two big pop radio top 40 music stations. And while I remember hearing songs like Daniel, oh no, I'm like a Rocket Man and Your Song, you know, we're also hearing the other songs of the day, like the Carpenters and Three Dog Night and all these other bands. But I remember Crocodile Rock was the one that I first bought. And I still have that original 7-inch single that I bought of his. And even then, I was a little intrigued. I don't know if I bought the album. You know, you didn't really buy albums a lot back then. But I think I did get that album. But I bought the single for sure. And then later that year, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road came out. And that was pretty much it. And that was and remains one of his best-selling albums in terms of a pure album. And obviously many consider his masterpiece, double album, 19 songs, and just a great piece of art. Even the album cover and the album packaging was memorable for the fold-out, the gatefold, and the photos, and every song had a little drawing for it with the lyrics. It still is one of the great album packages and one of the great album covers by an illustrator named Ian Beck, who ironically was brought back, which was nice, nostalgic, as well as a little closure there, to draw a new version of the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album cover, but this time with a more updated Elton as he walks off into the Yellow Brick Road to say farewell. And in fact, that's the image of the tour in terms of the tour program and the image that is associated now with the tour itself on T-shirts and everything like that. So as the tour comes to your town, you will see it. And so it's Elton instead of with a satin jacket that says Elton John on the back with big high heels. If you remember the original cover of him sort of surreally stepping into a poster of the Yellow Brick Road that's hanging on a wall. And go back to the album cover. It's really if you look close, it's really a clever picture. Elton is stepping into a brick wall. There's a poster on a wall and he's stepping into that where the Yellow Brick Road is. But now he's stepping into it to say farewell. And it's Elton in a tracksuit because he usually wears, you know, a sweatsuit, tracksuit when he's not on stage with, you know, EHJ, Elton Hercules John on the back of it instead of Elton John. And, you know, he still has some high heel shoes, but not the crazy ones like, you know, from the 70s. But now it's a kind of a new chapter. He's walking to say farewell. So it's kind of a nice little closure on that as they a hint at the past while updating it. And the really cool thing about is on the side of the illustration, there is a picture of, or a photo rendering of the illustration that is on the big huge video board at the concert. Where that wall that say he's walking into ends, there's an alley, and there's an image of Elton John from 1975 in the sequined Dodger uniform that he wore when he did two shows at Dodger Stadium in 1975, kind of sitting in an alley next to some garbage cans with his head down. Because that really, while it was the most, probably the biggest year of his career, he wasn't very happy personally. And so he's kind of, the image has him with his head down, kind of depressed, ironically. So it's kind of a little hint of the dark side of fame, as well as the exciting part of fame, and certainly the image of him fading off into the sunset as the next chapter and leaving. So there's a lot going on there, but and there's a lot going on visually as well as emotionally. As I said, for those of us who have been following Elton's career for these last, 4 to 5 decades, as closely as someone like I have, and believe me, folks, I mean, my nickname is Elton Jim, yes. And up to this point, I have been to 179 Elton John concerts throughout the United States and throughout the world. I've been in England. I've even been in Prague to see Elton. So I've seen him in quite a few places. And I've traveled quite a bit, and it's been a great part of my life, and I don't regret it. And no, I don't know how much money I've spent, and to be honest with you, I don't want to know. And to be honest with you, if I hadn't spent it on this, I probably would have spent it on something else. We all have our obsessions. Some people spend $5,000 to go to the Super Bowl, and some people go every week to whatever it is. So this is my obsession. And yeah, it's been an obsession, but it's also been a lifelong energizing experience, and I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I will continue to enjoy it as long as Elton is out there playing. I will be out there cheering, and so yeah, this new tour is certainly bittersweet because there is a finality to it, and certainly at age 71, I mean, who's to say? I hope, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, he lives to be 100 years old and maybe he'll still be playing. I don't know. But, you know, he is getting older. You never know at this point with the rigors of touring and age. So every show is really special right now. And so the tour started in Allentown, Pennsylvania, of all places, on September 8th. And so any Elton John fan, I think, worth his or her salt, certainly wanted to be there, and some of us were, and we made the travel to Allentown to see what I guess is the beginning of the end. Thankfully, it's a long goodbye. It's a three-year goodbye, so I will certainly have many opportunities to see him, as well as so will you, I hope. For those of you who have never seen Elton John, I would really encourage you to see this because he is one of our legends, and Elton John is something that it's crazy to even say this because he is so well known, and he's been around for almost 5 decades, and he's had number one songs and number one albums, and in many ways he has provided, and this has become a cliche, but you hear it a lot, but I think it certainly can pertain to Elton John's music. In many ways, he has provided a soundtrack for many people's lives. And the one thing, though, he has achieved everything you can in music. There's nothing he hasn't achieved. And in entertainment, there really isn't. There's few people that can fall into that category. He is in that category. Whether you like his music or not, you cannot deny his accomplishment and his longevity, whether you like him or not. You at least have to be honest about that. But those of us who have followed his career closely, the great mystery is, for all his legendary status, he's still underrated. I still believe that. All the number one albums, all the number one songs, all the notoriety, all the concerts, all the record-breaking concerts, all the huge events, the things like, the amazing goosebump moments and and moments that will be burned in people's memories, like when he performed at Lady Di's funeral, doing a reworked version of Candle in the Wind. And such an amazing performance that was heartfelt and yet strong, and the world just coalesced around it and reacted to it. And it really raised him up in terms, even though he had had a career for 25, almost 30 years before that, people, even those who didn't like him, said, wow, that was amazing. Now, those of us who liked him saw that and said, yeah, that's why we've been following him and so crazy about him for the last 28 years. He finally showed the world. But for all that, that he's accomplished, he still, in my mind, is underrated. There is still a question. He's in the top names, but people rattle off a lot of names, and sometimes his name is there and sometimes it isn't. And there's even a question about, oh, is he the best pop or rock piano player? A lot of people say, oh, Billy Joel is much better than Elton John. Well, on the charts, he isn't. On the number of records that he has sold, he isn't. Now, once again, Billy Joel is from New York, and New York is the middle or the center of the media universe. So it's understandable that Billy Joel would get a lot more hype and coverage, because he's from a spot where a lot of the people grew up in the media, grew up listening to him, and now they got jobs in the media so they could write about him. And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from Billy Joel. He's one of my favorite performers as well, and I have seen him perform many, many times in concert, and I have most of, if not all of his albums. And in fact, in 2010, I had the fortunate privilege to write the concert program that was sold at the Elton John and Billy Joel face-to-face tour in 2010. And I wrote about Billy Joel as well as Elton John. And I would put my Billy Joel information and knowledge up there as well. So I'm not taking anything away from Billy Joel. But I think, as I get back to my regular point here, if you haven't seen Elton John, this is your chance to see him. You have more than enough opportunity over the next 3 years to see him. And I hope you do, if you have never seen him, because it is one of those things like seeing Sinatra or something like that. When he's gone, there will be no other Elton John. And so it would be nice to be able to say, yeah, I saw Elton John perform. But what I think also, for those of you who have never seen him perform or you like a few of his songs, when you see him play in concert, I believe you will have your aha moment. And you'll understand why I travel all around to see him on a regular basis. The performance is amazing. His piano playing is amazing. What I think is interesting, and many people say, well, why, you know, well, Billy Joel's a better piano player, for instance. If you listen to some of Elton John's biggest hits, even though he is known as a piano player, obviously, his piano is not featured or isolated or high up in the mix of the songs many times. And so in a lot of Billy Joel songs, his piano is always present. He's always playing piano solos. His piano is always the lead instrument. But in Elton John's, many times it isn't. It's a part of it. It has its moments. It has some of its solos, but it's not the lead instrument many times. And I think that comes from the point of his viewpoint. He is a music fan. He always wants the best sounding song. And if that means his piano on it more than not for that specific song, great. But if there's moments where his piano does not need to be the lead instrument, it's not there. He's always been more concerned about the song and not necessarily about his prominence of his piano. So, yeah, there are some songs like Honky Cat or Benny and the Jets that are piano heavy that we all know. But there are other songs that were major hits that barely even, if they do at all, feature his piano. Like Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. It's there, but it's in the background and only toward the end of the song. Or The Bitch Is Back, a total guitar rock song, which easily could have had a piano solo in it, and in concert it does. But on record, it was like, no, no, this is a rock and roll song. We don't need my piano here. He was that much of an artist to say, no, no, it's about the song and the music. I don't need to be prominent here as far as my piano is concerned. And so a lot of, I mean, Don't Go Breaking My Heart, one of the best pop songs ever. Listen to that song, folks. There's no piano there. The main instrumentation is an orchestra arrangement in the middle and some guitar. That's what drives that song. So, yes, there's some ballads, but even ballads like Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. Listen to that song. There's some piano there, certainly, but there's some great Nigel Olsen drums that are prominent. Same thing with Someone Saved My Life Tonight. Yes, the song starts with piano, but it's a full band performance. So as I said, many of his songs don't feature his piano as much, but when you go see him live in concert, he's playing that piano. And I would argue to say that at 71, he's playing the piano better than he did when he was 25. And that to me is amazing. And there's no question, when you see him in concert, when he stands up from the piano bench and when he's walking around, his body shows every year of his 71 years, if not more. He's been through a lot. He was an alcoholic. He was a drug addict. He's been touring relentlessly. He's been sitting. People say, well, he sits down. What's the big deal? He's got arthritis in his fingers and in his knees and in his neck and in his back. He's been hunched over that piano for probably 68 years of his 71 years. He's been playing the piano that long. So when he gets finished with a song, when he stands up and takes a bow and walks and gets some water or walks to the middle of the stage to bow and to wave, he looks every bit of his 71 years. But what I am still amazed at is when a song starts, he's 22 years old again. He's playing that song with amazing energy and vibrancy and proficiency, and it's almost and scary how effortless it is. He's so talented. I don't even think he knows how talented he is. It must be common. It's just so effortless to him. But to watch it, it's amazing. And if you've never seen him, I think you'd have a new appreciation for him as a musician and as an artist. You may start to listen to those songs in a different way when you see him perform, even at this age, at what I would argue could be argued at the top of his game at 71. It's amazing. I remember my mom, when I went to my first concert in 1976, I went with my mom because I was only 12 at the Chicago Stadium here in Chicago. And, you know, my mom had heard me playing all this Elton John music for, at that point, 3 or 4 years. That's all I played coming out of my room. And my room was right off the kitchen, so they had to have heard it. In fact, 1 year they bought me headphones. Okay, plug in. We can't listen to this stuff anymore. But my mom went with me, and I'm so glad she did because it remains such a special memory for me now. She passed away, 12 years this month, actually. And so while I go to these Elton John concerts, I always have my mom's memory with me because I always remember my first one was with her. So she's always sitting next to me. And actually, I like to think the great line from Tiny Dancer. My mom was grew up in that era of the dancers, you know, with the whole big band. She loved to dance. She was an excellent dancer. And she loved to dance. And so when I hear the song Tiny Dancer, there's a great line in it, especially since she's passed away, which says, now she's in me, always with me. And that's how I feel about my mom. And so when I go to an Elton concert and when he plays Tiny Dancer, which he has to do now, it's one of his biggest songs, I always think of my mom. And when he sings that line, I just sort of get a little goosebumped and teary-eyed. And we had that moment. We both went to our first Elton John concert together. And I took her to a couple more over the years, but you never forget your first, right? But I'll never forget. I mean, she heard this music and it wasn't really her cup of tea at the time. You know, she was older. But after we, after she saw Elton play for 2.5 hours at the Chicago Stadium, she could not talk more about Elton John to her friends and anybody. She goes, I got to tell you, it may have been loud because, you know, it's a rock concert. They were, you know, that older generation at the time weren't used to amplifiers. She says, it may have been loud. She said, but my gosh, that guy sat there for 2.5 hours and played that piano unbelievably, and she came away a true fan. In fact, if you go on YouTube, you can see that there is a small short video from a VH1 show called Fan Club, which features me about my fandom of Elton John. Just go on Elton Jim on VH1. You'll find it on YouTube. And within, it's about a 7 or 8 minute little vignette. They featured like 4 fans on this show, and I was chosen as one of them. But I'm so glad that I was, because I had my mom on that show interviewed as someone to talk about my fandom. And she says that I went with him and he was playing that piano. I was a fan ever since. And she wasn't lying. So she had that aha moment. And so I think I would, like I said, I would certainly encourage anyone who has never seen him before to see him perform in this show, because you will, I think, come away, if not a big fan, you'll certainly have a new appreciation for his talent. And for those of you who are sort of middle casual Elton John fans, you want to see him one last time. And for those of us who are diehards, we have to see him. And I am really happy to report that this farewell tour is everything that it was promised. He came out saying that he was wanted to do the biggest and most elaborate show that he's ever done. And that's certainly, I've seen 2 shows now. I saw the first opening night in Allentown on September 8th, and then 4 days later on September 12th in Philadelphia. And the reason I went there was I'd never seen him perform Philadelphia Freedom in Philadelphia. So that's how much of the minutiae I'm getting into at this point in my Elton John fandom. So I said, geez, I've got to see him perform in Philadelphia one time and sing Philadelphia Freedom in Philadelphia, which I did, and it was cool. And the fans there did really react to it. So I've seen 2 of the shows so far. And I have to say that you certainly will get your money's worth. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes. You can't, with no intermission. 2 costume changes. He's wearing Gucci clothes now, and they're very cool looking. They're very flamboyantly Elton John. So you will not be disappointed there. There is a huge video screen with much of the time pointed right at him. So you will see his fingers playing on the piano, which will baffle you, as I said. And you'll also see him singing. So it doesn't really matter where you're sitting in that arena. You will get a great shot of Elton in his costumes, with his glasses, and hearing and seeing him perform. Meanwhile, there are also some videos that are made specifically for different songs. The show was designed and creatively put together by the artist and designer and photographer David LaChapelle, who worked on his Red Piano show in the at Caesar's Palace in the early 2000s. And LaChapelle is known for being very flamboyant and over the top. That's why he and Elton get along together. There's a lot of really cool images and visuals that go along with the songs. But and there are times when there's so much going on, you don't even know where to look. But at the end of the day, you know exactly where to look, right at that piano. His band is playing at top-notch form. He's really put together a great band with stalwarts that have played with him for many years, like Davey Johnstone, who's the guitar player with the long blonde hair. You see him on all the albums. And he's also the music director. As I said, Nigel Olsen, one of his original drummers, who's been on and off with him for many years, but now for the last 18 has been with him, and he's playing as well as ever. The percussionist Ray Cooper, who Elton has played with on and off since 1974 and has played solo shows with just he and Ray Cooper, is doing percussion, as well as John Mahon, who's been with Elton for now 20 years. Keyboard player Kim Ballard, who's been there for about five or six, and Matt Bassinet, who is the bassist, and he's been there for about 3 or 4 years now. And basically, those two are there. The keyboard player and the guitar and the bassist are so few in years because his regular people sadly passed away at young ages. And they'd probably still be in the originals. Guy Babylon on keyboards and Bob Birch on bass would most likely still be there. You know, they've been clocking in more than 20 years if they hadn't passed away. So he's got a top-notch band who know the songs, who perform the hell out of the songs. He plays well with. So from a musical standpoint, it's very satisfying. The diehard fans certainly are probably being a little disappointed because it's mostly the big hits. But you have to understand, diehards, that there's a lot of first-time or casual fans who are expecting to see those hits. And so it's always difficult in concert for Elton because he's got such a huge, huge catalog of albums, more than 30 albums over the last 50 years. And some of them jam-packed with not only the major hits you heard on the radio, but some great songs that never even got released on the radio or used to get played on FM but were never like considered singles that you can go out and buy but still were great songs, like Love Lies Bleeding, Funeral for a Friend, or High Flying Bird, or Blues for Baby and Me, or Harmony. These are songs that maybe some people know, some people don't, but as I said, he's got such a huge, huge catalog. It's not easy, but it's 2 hours and 40 minutes, 25 songs, so you're getting your money's worth. Visually, as I said, it's at times almost a sensory overload. You don't know where to look. If you go to the show, before you go, try to get as close to the stage as you can, even from where you're sitting, and you'll see around the stage, kind of outlining the video and around the whole stage from the bottom and around it to the top in the square, you'll see like bricks, Yellow Brick Road, right? Farewell, Yellow Brick Road. But they're carvings of different points in Elton's career. So there's an image of him as the pinball wizard from the Tommy movie. There are some album covers like Madman Across the Water. There's a bust. They're all reliefed too. They sort of stand out. They look like they are really carved into the wall. It's a great effect. But there's busts of him with Billie Jean King, one of his great fans. She wrote Philadelphia Freedom for her. She had a tennis team called the Philadelphia Freedoms. That's where the title came from. It's a picture of him with John Lennon. They hung out in the early 70s, mid-70s. That's why Elton did a version, which became a number one song, of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And Elton sang on John Lennon's number one song, Whatever Gets You Through the Night. And it was because of that going number one that John Lennon appeared with Elton John in 1974 at the Madison Square Garden to sing that song. Elton bet him if it became number one, he'd have to come out and sing it with him, and he did. And it turned out, little did we know, it would be John Lennon's last concert performance. He went into retirement for a while to have his son, and then sadly when he came back in 1980, he was killed. But so there's some amazing, little high points of his career in the small little details of just that, of this kind of relief, sculptures that are lining the stage around it. So take a look for that, as well as it's an interesting stage design. The band is kind of recessed into the stage, which is kind of an interesting concept. Elton's piano moves, which is a first. He's never really had that. So it's, and as I said, there's a lot of the videos are for the songs. There's some really nostalgic images from his past tours and his past looks. He's always looked different throughout the years. And so there you go, back from 70 when he's kind of this bearded ragtag hipster. And then you get right into the 70s when he's wearing all his crazy outfits and the Donald Duck outfit from Central Park in 1980 and the big, costumes from the mid-80s again. Him on the Muppet Show, the bird outfit, Dodger Stadium, getting knighted, you name it. It's really, they just do a great job of just putting everything together in his tour. And really, it's a celebration visually as well as musically as one of the amazing careers of one of our legendary performers. And so, yes, I'm biased, certainly, but I would think that if you're just a music fan or a pop culture fan, you owe it to yourself, even if you're not in love with all of his music. I think you owe it to yourself to see this. This is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing, that when he's gone, he's gone. You know, remember, did you always want to see Michael Jackson, or did you always want to see Prince? Well, now you can't. Did you hold off on that? You never know what life brings. This is an offering here that's there for you, and so if you have seen him before, you owe it to yourself to see him one last time. If you haven't seen it, you owe it to yourself to see him at least once. And if you're like me, you've seen him 179 times, you can't wait to see him again. And it is bittersweet. At this point, I'm not feeling as sentimental as I would think I'm going to later on in the tour, because right now it's new and fresh, and we, in theory, have 3 years ahead of us. But I'm sure as this tour starts to wind down and the reality and the finality of it hit me, it's going to be interesting. As I said, he will continue to perform, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that will happen even after this tour, but you never know. And so at this point, every show that you see, who knows? You hate to sound that way, but it is true. I won't give away a lot of things about the show because I want you to experience them as they happen. So I'm not going to tell you a lot of specifics, but I will tell you it is everything that was promised in terms of a celebration of his career and of his music and of his personality, of his philanthropy with the Elton John AIDS Foundation. It's all there. As I said, there are hints to the past. There are great memories being made, as well as memories being celebrated. And so it really is it's an extravagant and very complex show, you know, I'm sure production-wise, but it really is hardworking. There's a lot going on, a lot of moving pieces. And sometimes it is too big. Sometimes you don't even know where to look. But there's nothing wrong with that either. At the end of the day, if you're distracted, just remind yourself, look over at the piano, because that's where the real show is. But I have to say, just to give you some, some pointers or something to just look forward to, the performances of songs like Burn Down the Mission and Leave On is a 12-minute jam, which he's been doing for many years. It really showcases his band and his piano playing. There's a nice little nod to the Diehards, a song called Indian Sunset, which he does with Ray Cooper. There's a very poignant video for the song Daniel, which many people never really understood the title of. This song help adds a little meaning, but it's still a little surreal, on the surreal side, but at least it adds a little meaning to it, if you will. And for those of us who are real fans for a long time, my favorite Elton John album is Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. And the album made history in that when it was released, no other album in the history of the music charts entered these charts at number one, except Captain Fantastic in May of 1975. As I said, 75 was a huge year for him. And the only time it happened again right after it was by Elton John in November of 75 with Rock of the Westies. But Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy was the first album. Sinatra never did it. Elvis never did it. The Beatles never did it. Debuted at number one. That is historic. And it was so popular, and he was so popular, and this whole idea of Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, which is basically an autobiographical album about Elton John, who is Captain Fantastic, and his lyricist Bernie Taupin, who is the Brown Dirt Cowboy. And the album itself was illustrated by one of the great rock and roll illustrators, the late, sadly, again, another person who's passed away over the last couple of years, Alan Aldridge, who did a lot of work with the Beatles and their psychedelic looks and illustrations. He did the cover for Captain Fantastic. And it turns out it's one of the classic covers of all time, a beautiful fold-out illustration that sort of tells their story on the songs as well. If you look at all the imagery, you can spend hours just looking at that. It's very influenced by the artist Bosch, if you know who Bosch is, who does that heaven and hell thing with all the little figures. It's very dark, But it's amazingly illustrated. Well, this was so the album was so popular, and Elton was so popular that they decided to make a cartoon about Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. And Alan Aldridge began to do the illustrations and even began to do the animation for it. And it was going to be a Saturday morning cartoon. That's how popular Elton John was. And so some of the stuff actually got made. It was never released. And then, unfortunately, the project petered out. And one reason, I believe at least, and it's never been specifically said, but I'm almost pretty sure this is why, is that in 1976, at the height of his fame, Elton admitted or announced, whatever you want to say, that he was bisexual. And in 1976, that was a big deal. And it turned off a lot of people, especially in the South, here in the United States. And his popularity really was hurt for it, at least here in the United States. And the idea of having an Elton John cartoon on Saturday mornings aimed at kids with this admission of bisexuality just sort of put the kibosh on it. And sadly, that it never saw the light of day. And if you go on YouTube, you can actually find some animation from it. But the highlight for me, not only do I love the song Someone Save My Life Tonight from Captain Fantastic, but wow, what an unexpected and exhilarating highlight. They are using some of the animation that Alan Aldridge used that's been sitting around somewhere forever, never really seen by the public, to augment the singing of Someone Save My Life Tonight, this Captain Fantastic animated footage. And it is beautiful and amazing and eye-popping. And for me, that becomes a highlight. I won't tell you about any more than that, but wow, what a moment if you're a diehard fan to see some of this lost, we thought, or never seen before Captain Fantastic footage. So as I said, it's a 2 hour and 40 minute concert that celebrates his music visually, musically. You're seeing perform there live better than ever. It's a love fest. Some of the best well-known songs you've heard throughout your life there. It's hard to beat this entertainment experience. It's an entertainment experience, and it's an Elton John experience. Elton extravaganza, if you will. And so all I can say is I've seen two of them already, and I'll be going to many, many more, as I hopefully can hit 200 Elton John shows by the time the tour ends. But I just want to say, and I wanted to share this with you, that it's been a great part of my life. It's gotten me off the couch and into the world and doing things. Oh, instead of saying, wouldn't it be cool if, I've been doing it. I've been through in many airports, on many long car rides, in many hotels. In many ways, I felt like I was touring with them. But, and which has also added a lot of rich pages to the book of my life. But his music has always been important to me. His performances have always been important to me. As I've said, there's some things that are very special personally to me that I've shared with my mom and other people. I've made some amazing friends over the years who I would consider among my best friends, that if it was not for Elton, I would never even met them or known them. And they are now among my best friends. So it's been a major part of my life, and I am grateful for it, and I don't regret 1 minute of it at all, and all that it entails, and all the effort that it may have entailed as well, because it's given me so much, and it's helped me as a person, as well as just a fan. Elton John has been an important influence in many ways. And I don't know what to say, except I've enjoyed my Yellow Brick Road with Elton, and I'm hoping that you will too. So look for the farewell Yellow Brick Road tour coming to a town, coming to your town, or a town near you in the next 3 years. I hope you'll share that experience either with me personally, maybe we'll be at the same concert someday, or maybe just on your own if you have never seen him. But let me just say this to Elton John and his husband, David Furnish, who has been the main creative force behind this as well. Job well done on the farewell Yellow Brick Road tour. It is an entertainment experience that Elton John fans and music fans can all experience. And as I said before, I hope you'll go see it. And I am grateful that I stepped into that yellow brick road. And while there's been no place like home, Elton's music has been a home for me. And so I'm going to be enjoying clicking my heels three times and winding up in cities and towns, wherever it may be, to see Elton John, just to get those same goosebumps that I got so many years ago, that first time. Because that's why I think at the end of the day, people say, why do you go to all these shows? And I really do think it's because when he comes out, I still get those goosebumps. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your enjoyment. So we thank you for finding us and listening. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.